Have you seen Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
No.
Well, that's totally fine. You're still an acceptable human being. It really bothers me when people are like, oh, you haven't seen that?
Yeah.
How can you live with yourself not knowing what you don't know?
I know. Like, I'm the guy who hasn't seen any episodes at all of Game of Thrones or Breaking Bad or Mad Men.
Same here, same here.
And
have you?
I'm constantly being chastised in life.
Have you seen any of Legion yet?
In the future, I will have seen all of them.
Well, I'm impressed with your commitment then. And I do not think less of you.
In anticipation of the time I would need, I stopped watching Arrow a year ago.
Yeah. I'd seen way too much Arrow to think that Iron Fist was in any way original.
I just liked your statement as, I've seen way too much Arrow. It's like, I've known too many Spaniards.
I mean, yes, it is. It's no good. I've seen too many Arrows.
Welcome to
the Fantastic
Justice
Squad.
Super Bondo
Brother.
Friends.
The review stuff.
Welcome to another episode of Fan Bro Friends, everybody. Episode 25. We've reached the quarter century. Yes, or maybe
what,
just
really?
The quarter.
We've been doing this for 25 years. How long have I been asleep?
Not long enough. I'm your host, Sancho Panda, flying co-pilot with me aboard the Milano and fighting for control as we navigate this asteroid field. Secret alias man, what's your alias today?
Since we're talking about sequels, today my alias is Ben There Done That.
How apropos.
How apropos Dameron.
Wrong franchise. Back it up.
Still a pilot.
Oh, good point. Douche.
Oh!
And that's an Andy joke from Parks and Rec, so still relevant. Oh, Andy from Parks
and
Rec.
The circle of laughs.
I wish we could add a couple more seasons of him. But he's too popular now. That's how it is. Speaking of Mr. Popular, yeah. You've been busy. Maybe we should talk about what we've been up to for the past couple months that we've been gone. Since we've been gone.
You mean what I've been up to while you've been getting uber famous on Star Wars podcasts?
I was on one show one time, and maybe we'll be on a different one tomorrow, but that's not the point.
Hey, it only takes one ride to make an Uber.
Why does that sound negative?
I don't know. The German language is very superfluous.
That's a problem.
I have been doing some very heartwarming things, honestly.
Yes.
I
the cockles of my heart have been warmed just looking at the pictures you've put up on Facebook of all the things you've been warming.
Yes, my photos have been shoveling coal into a tiny little furnace.
That is my heart. No, the furnace is my heart. It's a metaphor.
I have been lucky enough and honored to join a group of people called Heroic Inner Kids who do charity events and grant Make-A-Wish type wishes to children who are possibly in hospitals or part of the Make-A-Wish Foundation or have other life circumstances where their world would be really brightened up by seeing their favorite character come and visit. So,
and he also does bar mitzvahs.
Yeah, I draw the line at a bris.
And
we can cut that out.
Go on.
No.
Oh, still on point. We haven't lost our... And then I can't think of the word. Go on.
Pull up, pull up.
Mojo. The word was mojo.
So, I have been, over the last month-ish, putting together a small collection of...
Arsenal, really.
An arsenal,
yeah.
Sure. Of characters to visit kids with. And during that time, I have done a Make-A-Wish for a child who happily enough, beat his cancer. He beat a tumor.
Woohoo!
And not only does he still get to go to Disneyland, but his wish was to meet Superman and Batman. And I was the Superman of the visit. The really neat thing about that particular kid is he was 5 years old. His name is Kip. And his favorite character was the Flash. Well, there's a guy in our group named David Arroyo who is the Flash. And
nice.
We worked up this skit where Catwoman came and outside of this boy's window where he was having his, what they call, release party, where he gets to go home.
Mm-hmm.
Without any forewarning, there was a Justice League battle outside of his window, as if you lived in Metropolis and this is just the kind of thing that you might see sometimes.
That's pretty awesome.
So imagine about 30 kids and 50 parents all gathering at the window, not understanding why Batman, Superman, The Flash, and Wonder Woman are chasing Catwoman on the roof underneath their window.
Okay, I've just got to make the comparison. This is like Patch Adams level epicness, like
yeah.
The pool of spaghetti. Like, that's what yes. this is.
Yes. Oh, and believe me, we I think had as much fun as the kids did. So the scenario is that Catwoman had stolen a briefcase from Star Labs.
Of course.
And we caught her and we brought her back up to the party, and under lasso of truth, she promised to be good for the rest of the party and to return what she took from Star Labs and give it to Kip, who was the rightful owner.
Ooh.
At this point, this little 5-year-old's face lit up like, what?
They just said my name. It's like when I get a shout out on podcasts I listen to. I'm like, hey, what?
Right. So imagine now the Flash taking the case over to this 5-year-old and opening it up. And inside this case is a pair of Flash boots, exactly like the full-blown costume that the Flash is wearing.
That's really awesome. Did he run to the kid really quickly, or was it like slow motion? How would Zack Snyder have directed this moment is what I want to know.
We asked Zack Snyder how he would do it, and did the exact opposite. And it worked perfectly.
Brilliant.
But the look on Kip's face. And he put those boots on so fast, and he wore them the rest of the night. It was...
That's so awesome.
It was amazing.
Wow, that's really cool.
Since then, I have been a part of a marathon to raise awareness and fight against human trafficking. We have another event set up to visit the Scottish Rite Children's Hospital. This coming Memorial Day, we're doing a Who Are You Carrying veterans appearance. And there is a upcoming event for children with autism. There are multiple events for children and the families of children with childhood cancer, which, mm-hmm. as you know, is very near and dear to me. So it's been a whirlwind. And I've even gone so far as to create a bit of a way for people to get in touch with me if you would like to have your child get a visit and have an event like this. So if you're listening...
And you do this volunteer, right? You guys
volunteer. It's absolutely free. It's a complete volunteer. Just something we just love to do and something that I love to do.
Right. But now, let me just interrupt and say how awesome that is, because my wife, who works for Big Brothers Big Sisters, was talking about one of her coworkers who called a company that like rents out people that dress as superheroes for an event for Big Brothers Big Sisters. And I was like, it's Big Brothers Big Sisters. So you should donate. You should donate.
You
should be a volunteer.
You could donate your own Big Brother.
Yeah. Maybe
like,
I
wait,
will.
I've got one of those just laying around. Why are you paying for this?
The best part of the story is, I wouldn't have brought it up if it didn't have a best part. The best part of the story is they want it to be Star Wars themed, and the lady in charge knows nothing about Star Wars, and she said she looked at the website and just picked the scariest faces she could find.
Oh, no. He doesn't like you.
I don't like you either. Hashtag where's Ray when like none of the women show up. I was like, oh my goodness, I had to have an intervention like right then and there and just be like, okay, here are the names you need to tell her need to be there. Oh my gosh. Anyways, you were saying, just let it interject that just to show how awesome it is what you guys do, because there are people out there who do events for profit, but you're just being awesome because it's a cool thing to do.
It's a very cool thing to do, and it's something that I know that both our mom and my sister would be very proud that we do. So that's
absolutely
why I do it. Mm-hmm. As a side note, one of my friends from the acting world, who is a makeup artist for movies, was talking to a director about some of this. And that particular director does a series of documentaries about normal people who do extraordinary things.
Ooh. And they so like nurses who also do roller derby?
Sure.
Like that kind of thing?
Yeah. School teachers who are astronauts. Yeah.
Exactly.
So they contacted me and we filmed my efforts to put together Star-Lord as a character to visit kids with, and they watched my progress doing that, and I got to tell them very much like what I told you about what it is that I do and why I do it, and they came with me to the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 premiere as we and other members of Heroic Inner Kids welcomed kids and pretty much anyone who wanted to come and hang out with the cast of Guardians in the lobby before they went in and saw the movie. So very apropos that we're talking about Guardians 2 tonight, because in the near future, that will be a little 8-minute film about my journey to be Star-Lord.
It's so cool when you're doing something nice and then other people who are also doing generous things start collaborating with you, because it's clear that they're making those videos to inspire people too.
Oh, absolutely. Awesome. And they were doing it strictly volunteer because it was something that they were passionate about as a project. So everyone's hearts were right in the same place. So if you have someone that you would like to do a special event for, I've set up some new ways to contact me, mm-hmm. and you can do it at Secret Alias Man. So whether that be on Facebook or Gmail or Instagram, you can find me at Secret Alias Man.
Yay!
What about you?
Well, I've been working on my crocheting.
Jane needs a new hat.
Yeah. A lot of time in the library working on my PhD. I think the main thing that comes to my mind is more of a sad note lately. I've been mourning the loss of one Chris Cornell.
Oh, yeah.
So, listening to the first CD I ever owned, Temple of the Dog, and reliving all my teenage angst. And going back through his albums of Soundgarden and Audioslave, and just, you know, the thing I liked most about him was that I felt like, hands down, he had the best vocals of that group. Eddie Vedder, to me, always sounded kind of like Mr. Ed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy's broken glass leg.
Like he was at the gym with one of those things strapped around his stomach that shakes the fat away.
Maybe that's his secret. No, I mean, the Pearl Jam, they're really cool. I've seen a documentary on them. I love Pearl Jam too, but he just had such a great voice, and it was just so melodic, and you could hear a lot more influences in his music, like blues and other types of rock, than in some of the other bands. And so I just appreciated the diversity. And also his lyrics tended to be more uplifting and consoling to people who are going through problems, rather than just saying, hey, look, my life sucks, I'm going to sing about it.
Right.
So it's
And he did a very, very good James Bond theme.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
For the first Daniel Craig James Bond, the mm-hmm. Casino Royale. So he was huge contributing factor in setting the tone for the first of the new era.
Yeah. So R.I.P.
also
Chris.
I don't know if you've seen it, but Ann Wilson from Heart did a tribute version of Black Hole Sun.
Oh, cool.
That you should look up on YouTube and watch.
Yeah, I think I will. He did a version of the song made famous by Sinead O'Connor, Nothing Compares to You,
right.
Which was like him on guitar singing, because Prince was the one who wrote that. Singing that for Prince after Prince died. And, you know, he's in his 50s, and I'm like, dude can still sing, like, great. You know, there are people like Bono who've just totally destroyed their voices.
Yeah.
And there's Chris Cornell, whose voice was ageless. So, man.
Yeah, there's awesome. There was Chris Cornell and the guy from AC/DC in a convertible just zooming down the road going, later, losers.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah. Hey, so speaking of news, before we get to the big show, is... Mm-hmm.
You mean us?
Yes. Or the galaxy, you know.
We've been off for 2 months and suddenly we're all having delusions of grandeur.
Potato, potato. So, Josh Whedon is taking over the Justice League movie.
Yeah.
So, it's both tragic...
He's our only hope.
And somewhat reassuring news. For those of you who don't know, Zack Snyder, who the much maligned Zack Snyder, who we have not been shy about putting in the corner of the boxing ring.
You could say and, much maligned and just be referring to our podcast.
Yeah. Taking off the gloves to reveal the bazookas that were inside them.
Bazooka hands. Oldest trick in the book.
Taser face. So, as much as we have done that, of course, you know, we've only ever commented on his professional output, never him as a person. And he's suffered a tragedy that no one should ever have to go through, which is the suicide of his daughter.
Yeah.
So he has, rightfully so, stepped back and decided that this is the time to be with his family. And in no way are we saying anything other than that is 100% the right thing to do. In that situation, the studios have approached Joss Whedon to take over what remains, which is the reshoots that were already planned and mm-hmm. possibly the editing.
So, and rewriting the script. And no?
No. No. You're dreaming, David. It's time to wake up.
Okay. Okay.
You're still in fourth grade. Congratulations. You have a test. So it was one of those headlines where it started with Joss Whedon taking over Justice League, and then you read the rest and you went from this, huh, what, to, oh no, that's terrible, to, oh, well, that was really a wonderful thing for Joss to do for the sake of the world of movies, and I'm sure the Brotherhood of Directors, where he
yeah.
would... He would
yeah.
think that this is something that any one of us would do for any other one of us, regardless of the circumstance. So I can't imagine that he'll have an incredible amount of impact on it, but he will see it through. So we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, and if nothing else, I mean, if even when all the shooting is done, you still have to edit the movie in a way that it flows well. And he's good at that.
Yeah. So. And the editor has the choice to take scenes out.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a scene that is possibly too dark or derails the story...
Did you say a sink?
No. All the sinks you leave in.
Exactly, man. That's our bread and butter. Kryptonite sinks.
Yeah, there are two people that can beat Superman, and that's Bruce Wayne and Mario. It takes plumbing. Oh, that's what Justice League is. Darkseid hires Mario.
Spoiler alert.
What? You didn't see that coming? So, yeah, it's very, very interesting times we live in. All the early reviews of Wonder Woman seem good. They've made the bold move of premiering it to critics.
Gasp.
Not just to fans and bolting and locking the doors like zombies outside the Winchester. They've let the critics in. And the critics are saying that they are likening it to Captain America, the First Avenger.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that it may not be blow your doors off spectacular, but it's solid, that it's a good movie, and that it definitely is what we're hoping for, that something has righted the ship.
Yay. Well, we'll decide that for ourselves, of course.
I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
I want it to be good. Plus, Chris Pine's eyes. I mean, I think that is the sixth Infinity Stone.
Sixth and seventh.
Take my money.
But we already have the Eye of Quasimodo, or whatever it is.
Not the same.
Agamemnon? Motorola. I don't know.
So speaking of things that we're super appreciative of, I continue to be super appreciative of our sponsor. And one of the things, when you've asked what have I been doing lately that I have not been doing, is properly maintaining our contest.
Oh, so, yes.
So starting now, we have a contest. And that contest is send us in a photograph of your most treasured comic that you would like to have framed and displayed. And if we deem it the most awesome, then you will win a free comic frame from comicbookframe.com.
Yeah.
Which is not only the best frame that you can buy, but also has the best jingle you could hear.
Cue the jingle.
Comic Book Frame, that's the name. Slide your book in and then display. Do it once, you'll do it again. What's that name? Comicbookframe.com.
Frame.com. Yeah.
Personally, I would like to call this contest Steal a Frame from Garrick, because he's the only one who's entered so far. And we're obviously going to pick someone else over him so we're not accused of favoritism. So you got this.
Anyone. That is the name of this contest.
Exactly.
I will be renaming that on our Facebook page tomorrow as the Anyone Can Win But Garrick contest.
Yay.
So send in your photos of your most treasured comic to our Facebook page at Fanbro Friends. There's an event set up for it. Look for it. You can send it in there.
Yes. Fanbro Friends on Facebook. So, should we talk Guardians Volume 2?
Let me get my Walkman. Hold on.
Got to get the mood going.
Ooga chaka. All right. I can no
I
longer
can't
fight this
stop
feeling.
These pandas. Smiling these... inside of me.
I can't fight these trash pandas.
It's like a happy version of the Alien movies.
What?
All these pandas inside of me struggling to get out.
Oh.
They entered through my ear and now they're just trying to get out.
Gotcha.
Now watch out for those panda-colored mushrooms.
All right. So, for those of you who may not have seen the first Guardians of the Galaxy film, or who saw it once and then walked away and had a life and did other things, we never laughed less. We always laughed more at the Guardians.
Yes. We'll try that again.
New segment. When we last left our heroes, Little Rocket had fallen down the well.
That little Groot had fallen down the well.
Yeah.
Rocket's Lassie well. In this story.
Get out of the well, smaller, dumber Groot. So, when we last left our heroes, our hero, Andy from Parks and Rec, had just been told that he had a very special father, according to his DNA scan that Nova had done. But
without permission, I might add.
Yeah, well... You know, cell block C. Call a lawyer. Go ahead. Hi, I'm Matt Murdock. I'm your attorney.
Nice.
What? I'm in this universe, right, guys? Let me in. I'm really good.
Guys,
I was in Stardust.
You always mentioned the incident.
There have been newspapers on a wall. I saw him. No, wait. I didn't see him. Oh!
I felt him.
So, the question of who is Peter's father?
Who's your daddy? Peter.
The other question of Gamora and Nebula being sisters from another father. best dad in the world, unless he's on your world, and then worst dad on your world.
Yeah.
Thanos.
Definitely.
I think they pretty much wanted to kill each other still at the end of the last film. Groot sacrificed his life to save everyone else and
become a meme.
to become a meme.
To replace the dancing flowers.
And by the way, everything that I have read has said that the baby dancing Groot was not the same as the adult Groot. It
yes.
has no memories of the life that Groot lived, which I find wonderful because that means that the Groot from the first film really did make the ultimate sacrifice and that it did mean something.
Mm-hmm.
So, baby Groot is now a community child. They're all trying to raise it equally. And Yondu won the skee ball prize of a little troll instead of the Infinity Stone.
So. Yeah, you're right. It's a step above Cracker Jack box prize. It definitely is a skee ball prize.
Yeah, it's the plastic ring, it's the Transformers eraser, or it's the troll. That's what you... Those were your options.
Yeah, if you're at Showbiz Pizza, Chuck E. Cheese, they've gotten cheaper. But Showbiz, totally. You can totally earn the troll.
And they were off to be pirates. They're off to... They're off to do their thing. They're off to be Firefly.
Yes.
I said it.
Yeah. I was laughing because the Pirates Who Don't Think Anything song came into my head from VeggieTales. We so, just stay home and lay around.
Speaking of pirates, you usually ask me what was my experience watching a film.
Yes.
So first of all, my experience... I saw the film, I've seen it three times now.
Wow.
I saw the film the first night at the first premiere where I was dressed as Star-Lord for the premiere. But I had been cramming my costume, my suit, which had just any number of things going on, a working Walkman, guns that fire, lights, the whole, like the helmet that works, the whole bit. And I had gotten 5 hours sleep in 3 days.
So we get it. You love children.
I was sitting there watching the film and they turned all the lights off and I was so sleepy.
Oh my gosh. That does sound terrible.
So they show the trailers and the Pirates of the Caribbean, the new one, Pirates of the Caribbean 23 comes on.
If you ask us to get good ratings, we'll just tell you we don't get good ratings.
We are the cash register that still kind of works.
And somehow we got Grindelwald.
So
still hurts, man. Still hurts.
That Pirates trailer was so bad. It was so bad. And the level
yes.
of dumb that those pirates displayed, like, it really showed what idiot pirates look like. And I admit, it tainted my spirit going into this. It did a disservice to the idiot pirates that Guardians later showed. And I was now wanting to do like a Who Wore It Best of dumbness pirates.
Wow.
But other than that, it was fine. I would say that Guardians had the best opening 4 minutes of any movie that I've seen in quite some time. And it easily got me just, you know, fist in the air like, yes, okay, thank you.
Yeah.
This is it.
Okay, so I definitely thought, how are they going to top the feel of the first one? And they totally topped it. This is my second favorite opening of all time, still behind Nightcrawler and X-Men 2.
Yeah, I'll give you that. That's tough to beat. Winner and still champ, X-Men 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But so good. We don't want to do spoilers now. But it's really hard not to just like start geeking out about how amazing every scene is in this movie. But yeah, it's great and adorable and awesome.
All right, so how would you describe this movie then?
Have you seen the first Guardians of the Galaxy? That's
yes.
how I would describe this movie. I put a lot of thought into that. I was like, so picture Guardians 1. Done. Yeah, there you go. Doesn't miss a beat, like in a good way. Not in a sequel retread kind of way, but in a story continuing, still just as good kind of way.
I would describe this movie as... the ninth day of a family road trip.
Brilliant.
And we somehow ticked off the family from Deliverance.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm totally on board with that. I mean, James Gunn is known as saying Volume 1 is about a family coming together and Volume 2 is about what it means to be a family. And that's when you're learning to deal with everyone's idiosyncrasies and all the things that you know bug each other.
Yeah.
So that seems like we're already almost going into it, but superpowers and Achilles heels for this movie? Do you like to go first?
So you'll be surprised to learn, as much as you are not loath to point out my exuberance of some films, that
I am the more critical.
I think I have very nearly an equal number of superpowers and Achilles heels for this one.
I was going to say gasp, but then I thought if I actually did it, that'd be more effective.
Tweet it.
Hold on. Oh, I've got to log back in. Hold on. You can't... I'm going to have to make sound effects for my thumbs touching my phone. Beep, boop. Beep, boop, boop, beep. All right, I've taken that bit far enough. Let's go on.
Tweet your gasp face to Instagram at @secretaliasman. So, the superpowers, the opening was fantastic because it took everything that we liked and crammed it all into 4 minutes. We love the music. We love Baby Groot. We love the team coming together. We love them doing battle.
Yes, we love the jokes they make while doing battle and the things they say that aren't jokes but are still funny while doing battle.
We love overwhelming odds. We love when things don't go right and they come up with Plan J.
Yeah.
So they just, it was as if they said, we know what you want, here it is.
Yeah.
Like a Jurassic World movie that somehow said, you want Chris Pratt and dinosaurs, let's just get straight to that. I think that it had, to me, an equally good soundtrack. And even the symphonic score, the theme to Guardians is one of Marvel's best symphonic themes.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I mean, they all kind of sound the same, but it's still unique enough. It's got a standoutness to it. Yeah.
Yeah. This movie was a story. It was a complete story. It was telling the next stage of what happens to these characters, and it did it without being a setup for another movie. And I found that very refreshing and very enjoyable.
Yeah. There weren't like one of them runs off and goes into a hot tub and has a vision while they're being electrocuted.
Yeah. Or one character goes into a science laboratory and creates a vision.
You're right. This movie showed the strength of when it's just its own thing and it's not building into something else. Totally agree with that.
I thought all of the characters went much deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed the pairing up. So in the same way of the Star Trek film where you got to see Spock and Bones on their own adventure and Kirk and Chekhov on their own and Uhura and Sulu on their own and these very interesting pairings, you got to see that here.
Yeah.
So you got to see Yondu and Rocket, which I would not have predicted, but that was really interesting.
Yeah, that was a great pairing.
You got to see Drax and Mantis.
Which I think was the surprise hit, hands down the surprise hit of the whole movie.
So that little bit of shaking things up and realigning was very definitely a strength, because when you get characters who are very well defined and then you pair them up with different characters and you get to watch them play off each other, it's just like you keep going minute by minute and you realize I've been enjoying the heck out of this film for 45 minutes and it's just flown by. And that's one of the reasons.
Yeah.
The jokes were good. And I know that that's not an easy thing to do when people expect it. And as a writer, I have to say that I tip my hat to the crew, the writing crew of this film, because some of those jokes snuck up on you. And in a film where you're expecting them, that's an accomplishment. So panda clap to the writers.
Yeah. One of my Achilles heels of this movie was that a couple of what would have been the funniest bits in the movie were in the trailer, and it took away from the tension for me.
Yeah. You mean like Drax laughing at Mantis being able to read Peter's feelings?
Or Rocket telling Groot which button not to push. Mm-hmm. Like, they showed almost that entire scene in a trailer. So you get to that part, you're like, oh, okay, now I know every line that's about to happen right here. And it just kind of, I was just like, I would have rather not have known that. It's probably my fault for watching any trailers. But still.
Well, you know,
you fault the movie for that, though? I don't know, but I still do.
I don't think that you can, because it's an entirely different group of people that decides what to put in the trailer.
Yeah. And overall, the trailers gave us very little. So they still did a good job. It's just when that point actually happens in the movie, it's during a part where I would have rather not known anything that was going on.
Yeah.
So I could just be totally immersed instead of taken out of it for a second. That's okay. You said you have other critiques, though?
I do.
Other Achilles heels.
So,
my or as the Chihuahua says from Lady and the Tramp, other chili deals. Why had I not made that connection before?
One of my weaknesses, and this isn't spoiling too much, but there's another appearance by Howard the Duck.
Yeah, boo. I didn't like him the first time.
Seriously, in the words of What's-Her-Face from Mean Girls, stop trying to make Howard the Duck happen.
More Cosmo. More Space Dog. Or even Cosmo from Seinfeld. Anyone but Howard the Duck.
There were, among all of the jokes that really landed, there were a few that didn't.
Mm-hmm.
The fruit not being ripe joke.
Yeah.
Where they set it up three times before the punchline, and the punchline finally came, and you went,
I honestly didn't think she needed to say anything. I thought if it just, like, cut, like, as she's spitting it out, it would have been funnier.
Yeah. And again, this isn't a spoiler, but the famous Stan Lee cameos in all of the Marvel films.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a fan theory for a long time that Stan Lee showing up, even for just 5 seconds in every Marvel film, what if he is this character called the Watcher? So in the comic books, there's a character who stays outside of human events but documents them. And so he will appear at various times that are important. So they were saying, what if Stan Lee is the embodiment of this character? That would be great. So James Gunn decided to make that real. So in this film, there's a scene where Stan Lee is on a planet talking to other Watchers, and he's telling them of his multiple visits to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first saw that, I thought, how satisfying. Everything that we ever thought, I bet he's a Watcher. And then James Gunn made it real.
James Gunn just has this pulse on the fans. It's just kind of cool. Anyways, you were saying...
Yeah. Well, and that's what's great about him being a fan himself.
Yeah.
He takes the things that he loves and he puts them in.
Mm-hmm.
But I walked out of the theater that night going, wait, hold on a second. Because in one of the movies, Stan Lee was Hugh Hefner. And in another movie, he was that interview guy with the suspenders, with the radio show,
mm-hmm.
who were real people. And it's cool and all that he's a FedEx guy sometimes, but he can't be multiple real people.
And in one, he's just drinking a drink that has some Hulk juice in it, or Hulk blood in it, right? Like, that's not actually observing anything or anybody. I mean, it was his day off.
So I felt slightly, like, a little off kilter because I went from really saying, yay, awesome, you did the thing, and then I realized, I don't understand the thing. That makes no sense. So it's tiny and it's picky, but it's there.
Oh, I think the easy way to retcon that would just be to say that he has a power to impersonate other people where he doesn't actually look like them, but it fools everybody else. In that way, he's able to get extra perspectives. Retconned!
So he roofied Hugh Hefner and
Absolutely.
Took his place.
No,
to meet
Hugh
Tony
Hefner
Stark.
Was actually somewhere else doing his own thing. But this guy just impersonated him somewhere else.
I don't know.
It's not like a primer thing. He doesn't have to knock out his doppelganger.
And we can get more into this in spoilers, but there's a thing now that Marvel fans talk about, and no matter how much you love a Marvel film, it's still a thing that they talk about called the Marvel villain problem.
Yeah. Yippity yip.
And this film had the Marvel villain problem.
Yeah, I guess when we get to spoilers, we'll talk more about it. Is this your kryptonite sink, the villain?
This would be my kryptonite sink.
All right, then we'll save that. We'll save that. Any other superpowers you want to mention?
I will say that the best superpower of this film is that the last 15 minutes made me feel all the feels and was worth everything that we had gone through to get to that last 15 minutes.
Hmm.
And I think that's what you want from a really good story.
Yes, because it shows that you care about what's happening to the people that you're watching.
Mm-hmm. And I think if I'm going to compare it to any of the really enjoyable films that I've seen over the course of my life. One of the consistent things you can say is that it opened strong, it gave you characters you cared about, and it closed really strong. And this film did do that.
Yeah. I guess my biggest strength is very similar to yours, but my focus is in another part of the movie. It's just, for me, it's that everybody's character arc makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of times in a sequel, you'll have someone acting so out of character from how they were in the first one just to spice things up without any real explanation to it. And I didn't feel like this movie fell into that trope. And instead, you just see people going on these arcs that make so much sense. And the one that stood out to me was Drax. You know, he's so, like, dull and serious in the first movie. And in this one, even from the trailers, you see he's laughing a lot more. But it still makes sense for his character, and you learn that he still, deep down inside, has the grief of losing his family that he's dealing with. And it's like, when I saw the trailers, I was like, okay, this isn't going to work. He's too different. But then you see the movie, and everybody, every change that happens to them, it just all works.
It really does.
They did a great job writing each character, and when you're dealing with that many characters, that is a very impressive feat.
And I would even say the same thing about Yondu, that you got to see what a different person he was when he was out of earshot of the other pirates.
Yeah, his very first appearance, man, he's so much more vulnerable than I would have ever expected him to be from the first one, that it floored me, but it was done in a way that was very believable. And it just gets you to empathize with him. You're like, I didn't go into this movie planning to empathize with Yondu. To feel sorry for him, to relate to him as a character. Well done, Gunn.
Yeah. Pew, pew, pew. Very, very well done.
Gun shooting. Pew, pew. All right. So, how would you rate this movie on a scale of 5 sad pandas to 5 happy?
I found that the movie was incredibly enjoyable. I would, and did, watch it again in the theaters.
Twice more.
And I will buy it and own it when it comes out. However, the villain problem is big. And there are two villains, and they both have the problem. So, unfortunately, I have to take away two pandas just because... Let me say it this way. This movie is fun, but not better.
Yeah.
The heroes were better, but the villains were worse. Which is not
okay,
great.
Okay, wait, wait. You think he's worse than Ronan? One-dimensional Ronan from Guardians 1? You think he's worse than that?
So Ronan and Nebula both were very flat in 1.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem that I saw with them is that for aliens, their motivations were not very alien. They were just human but boring.
Yes, and not even well described. We never really knew why Ronan was a radical terrorist. We never found out. What was behind it all?
And Nebula's motivations were very nebulous.
They're fleshed out in the second one, and it makes so much sense, but not in the first.
But I think with the villain in this one, as much as he explained his motivations, they still were confusing to me. And I think in some way that's worse than someone who just doesn't explain them and is flat.
Okay. I can see that.
So
I was gonna put this villain above Ronan, just because he was able to show more range as an actor, more emotions. He had more emotions than Ronan did.
Yes.
So
as in 3.
Yes. So to me, I'd say he's more of a General Ross than a Ronan, you know, in terms of villains.
All right.
Ross being from Incredible Hulk. You know,
not
his motivation
friends.
Is like, okay, I get it, but it's stupid. Or the guy who ended up being the real Mandarin. Like, I'd put him with those villains. I wouldn't put him. I'd put Ronan close to the very, very bottom. Ronan and Malekith from Thor: The Dark World.
But on the whole, like I said, I think that each of the heroes was better and deeper and even more entertaining than the first. So I'm going to give this a 3 happy panda.
All right, and it's obviously from our discussion, the villain. I still thought it was the biggest flaw, but I didn't have maybe as much of a hang-up as you, so I'm going 3.5. 3.5 pandas, which You guys know me. That's really high.
It's really high. Your little panda reached the finish line. It stuck out that last paw.
Yes, he did.
And hit the death button.
All right. So we did want to add one other thing before we go into spoiler talk, a new thing that we're going to start doing more intentionally, which is talking about if you're taking kids under a certain age or of a certain age to this movie. We still haven't figured out what to call it. The kid's chair, the high chair, the booster seat.
The how much do I have to explain to you about life on the ride home chair?
The toddler we'll tissue? No. Yeah. I mean...
toddler talk. All right, for now, we'll call it the kid's chair because I envision, you know, you're sitting next to your child in the theater and from their perspective, what are they seeing, you know? So mm-hmm. from their perspective, and as a parent, if you're considering taking your child to this film, let me say that one of the things that I was surprised at is that in a Disney film, there was a very extended penis joke.
Yes.
There is another scene.
I'm trying not to talk about your use of the word extended. Dang it.
Speaking of,
and then there's the times mom wouldn't be proud of me.
Speaking of kids chair. Yeah. There is another scene where, there's a pirate mutiny and they are disposing of pirates that were on the wrong side, in their opinion.
Yeah, and we won't say how, but it is dark.
They're doing it in a way that would be a bit dark for a younger child.
Yes.
There is a scene where it is alluded to and then shown how multiple other children have been...
Procreated,
and then had... an end that was not great. And a young child might be a bit put off by seeing that image of what happened to a lot of other children.
Yeah, but it could also be a great way to discipline your child with the threat of that fate. So, you know, six of one. Hey, that's not
12
the
of the other.
Yes. 12 dozen of the other.
However, all of those things are handled fairly quickly. They're glossed over fairly quickly and nothing is ever belabored. So it soon enough gets back to jokes and Baby Groot and laser guns and ship battles and you know. So I don't know, what age would you think would be the cutoff to take a child to see?
Yeah, of course, it depends on the kid, and it is rated PG-13 for a reason, but I'm going to say 9 or 10, depending on the kid.
That's about what I would say.
Yeah.
If the talk of biology is something that you've already had, then they're fine for this.
I would like to add, though, be ready to talk to your kid about the issues of single parenting, because it comes up a lot in the movie, and in a really good way that can promote very healthy discussions.
I would agree with that.
But to me, it seemed like the biggest theme of weight to the movie. It has to do with, you know, when mom is missing, when dad is missing, who becomes that parent in your life? What is that relationship like? And it's awesome.
And even to have some empathy for if you know someone, if you're a friend with someone who might be in an abusive parent-child relationship, this gives some insight into what that is like for them.
Yeah, agreed. Bringing out the big guns. James Gunn. There's a pun there because it's bring out his last name.
The big gun-nuns.
There were two N's in it. I held it out. The listeners know. Spoiler talk.
Spoilers. Cue theme.
Spoilers. We're bringing back a couple games for our spoiler talk. Yee-hoo. First one, you might have guessed, I am the villain. So even though we just had some theme music, let's bring back my daughter's wicked laugh. So, you wanted to lead this segment. big bro, take it away.
Okay, so spoilers, the villains. And the big question, who is Peter's dad? So the trailers already gave it away. It's Kurt Russell.
Oh. Oh, wait, we're in spoilers.
And yeah.
Yes, so, Kurt Russell, the Robert Redford of the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes. So his dad is the strongest man in the world and the computer who wore sneakers. And he's back, Disney. So the thing about not Kurt Russell, but the character that he plays, which is Ego, the living planet. Mm-hmm. So the thing about Ego is he starts off being, hey, I'm your dad. Let's play catch.
Yes.
And you're all heartwarmed and you're all Field of Dreams. And this is great.
Exactly. Exactly. Field of Dreams. I was expecting Shoeless Joe Jackson to show up.
Yeah. Yeah. Aren't we bringing Thanos? No, we couldn't stand him when he was alive. So we told him,
we told him to stick it. Poor Thanos, not in the movie. Not even in the mention. Well, yeah. No. Nebula mentions him several times.
So first of all, like, when you first see Kurt, in the opening of the film, he's hanging out with the beautiful blonde, playing music, driving around in a Corvette, and making out in the forest and making some babies. And you realize that he's done this planet after planet after planet. So he's just seeding all of the galaxy women that he can find. So he's basically Captain Kurt.
Captain Kurt Russell.
Yeah. So when a guy shows up and he says, my name is Ego, that should be a clue.
Yeah.
That should be a little bit of a clue. So at first I thought, is this like some in-joke that he's a living planet, like that Disney just owns everything now? And his plan is to continue to take over everything. And if that's true, is Kevin Feige God? what exactly is happening here?
Or Kathleen Kennedy.
Oh, yeah.
I want them to fight it out. I want them in a ring fighting for ownership of everything. And she gets a lightsaber and he gets those Hulk hands. Okay. Anyways, go on.
And you know, like, at least Guardians had the self-awareness to address the feeling that we're feeling of, I don't know about this guy, when Gamora just looks Peter in the face and says, you know, if he turns out to be evil, we'll just kill him.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So you've got maybe a bit of that radar going in. And so when he actually reveals himself to be evil, it's not exactly the big twist.
No. No. I mean, yeah, he seemed kind of seedy to begin with.
Ha ha. But when he just goes ahead and tells Peter, and by the way, I killed your mom.
Yes. Why?
It seemed
like...
Why would you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Why would you make those mouth sounds to someone that you want to still be on your side in what what amounts to your closing summation of the trial? Now, I understand somewhat because he is Ego, and he, by definition, does not think outside of himself and what the reactions of others would be. So
he assumes that Peter is going to be on board with him at this point.
Exactly, because Peter, like, Ego's thought is, you're half me, so you should want what I want.
Right, and as soon as I explain it to you, it's obvious.
Right, you're just going to jump on the ship, and we're going to go off together, father and son. All I have to do is explain it to you.
This ship from Mork and Mindy, this egg ship from Orson.
Yes, exactly. Which, by the way, was not lost on me with all of the other 80s references. And by the way, I was somewhat nostalgically sad when... In the opening, Peter pulled out the Mattel Electronics Coleco football game.
Yes.
Because I was alive and that age during those years, but we could not afford a Coleco official Mattel football game. So I had the Sears knockoff.
Oh, gosh, game. Yes. I remember.
Which, by the way, I still have.
Wait, don't you have the two-player one, though?
No, I had the one-player.
At some point, we had the two-player one in our house.
We did.
So I remember.
We did. But the one that I still have is the one player that was confiscated many a time in study hall.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, you couldn't put your hand on the back to mute the sound enough. Flaw. But I somewhat went out of my way to try to understand Ego, and with all of his speeches about he was lonely, and with mm-hmm, everything that we've mm-hmm. always said of the prime directive of a villain is that they want to be understood.
Right.
Ego wanted to be understood, and he wanted to be loved by a son. And he had a son, so all that remained was to be understood by his son. And so he made the mistake of being completely honest with his son in the naive hope that he would just instantly be understood by his son, which is what he wanted. And because he only thinks of himself, he didn't understand in this moment, and by in this moment, I mean in any moment, don't tell Peter you killed his mom. Yeah.
That was it. Congratulations. Jackpot. Yeah.
As much as he likes his eternity contact lenses.
Calvin Klein.
Yeah. So, but then that made me think, all right, I have another question. So you killed Peter's mom, but if you are a celestial, if you are a god with a little g, if you are that powerful, why not make her immortal? And
yeah, I mean, it seems like he has limits to his power, obviously.
If he can do all of these other things, you would think he could extend her life and bring her to his planet. If he loved her that much but still wanted to continue with his mission.
Yeah. Well, the point is he didn't try, right?
Right.
Maybe he doesn't have the power to actually create another conscious being. Maybe that's what's outside of his power. But he didn't even try to sustain her or clone her or anything. Yeah. She didn't have the AllSpark, though. So it's a Transformers reference, but not the movie, the Generation 1. Anyways, go on.
But I know what you're saying, that either Ego has limits to his power or he's holding himself back because he's trying to be conscious of you can't dump everything on Peter right away.
Mm-hmm.
But another problem that I had with him, once he went full villain, he could have killed all of the Guardians right away. This bit of the Earth slowly comes up to get you. No, that didn't have to happen. He could have just thrown boulders at all of them and crushed and killed all of them anytime that he wanted to.
He could have shrunk his entire self back into the head and they would have all just died a horrible death in space.
And the only reason that I can think of that he wouldn't have done any of the infinite number of ways that a planet can kill something on itself is that he still wanted Peter as a son, and he knew that killing them, who he loved, would lose Peter's affection for him.
And the point here is we're having to make a whole lot of our own decisions about his motivation,
right,
that we shouldn't have to be making if he's well fleshed out in the movie itself.
Right.
Another one for me. He said that he searched for other life, and when he found it, he was disappointed. Why? He never actually explains why he's disappointed. Is it because they're not like him?
Well, and see, here's the thing. In the books, Ego is not a celestial. He's an elder, right, of the universe. So he's a lesser being. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to go with the movies where he's a celestial, celestials have a telepathy among each other.
Mm-hmm.
So if he were a celestial, he would not have been alone.
And again, here, I can come up with another explanation, but why should we have to? I could say, okay, he was the youngest, he was a baby by the time all the others passed away.
It just seemed like a very weak mentality that this particular celestial had. His whole plan of, well, I'm lonely, so I'm going to wipe out everything in the universe.
And then I'll just be stuck with this one person for all eternity.
You would think over the course of the millions of years that he explained that he had been in existence, if this is his best plan, that's too bad.
Dude, yeah. Yeah, because it's not the tragically misunderstood villain, it's the idiot villain.
Yeah, I mean, imagine someone saying, what I really want is for my son and I to be the only people in the United States. So I'm going to wipe out everyone else in the United States, and he and I are going to live here, and I'm going to be happy.
Okay, Taking Tree by Shel Silverstein's evil brother.
Tell you what, for a planet, he sure didn't understand the gravity of what he was doing.
Hey-o.
Ho. So the other villain problem, well, while we're talking, I'm the villain, is the Sovereign.
I liked them because I thought they were silly plot filler, and it seemed like from a comic book, like straight out of a comic book, what idea someone would come up with and how it would be executed. So I was fine with it.
Yeah, it did, and they were amazing for the opening that they were in. But mm-hmm. for them to be the recurring villain that came back two more times.
Okay.
And for their motivation to just be, we're easily offended, mm-hmm. was very thin. And I know that the real reason for their existence was for the after credit scene where she would create Adam Warlock. And we know that we need Adam Warlock if we're going to have the Infinity Wars. And we'll get to his character in a second. But if you can't force that. If you need Adam Warlock, you need to come up with a good way to get to Adam Warlock, and this was not it. The Sovereign struck me, like, if you don't know that that's where their purpose is heading, they just seem silly. It struck me like, this is what happens when you let a society that only plays video games breed with just each other.
It's Idiocracy.
It's Idiocracy with Galaga.
Yes, so I'd see that movie. Oh wait, was that Pixels? I take it all back.
So I say leave the beginning exactly as it is. Leave the flirtation between Aisha and Peter just like it is. Have Rocket steal the batteries. Leave all of that. Mm-hmm. But later, when you need something in Act 2 to suddenly show up and disrupt things and chase them through the asteroid field, like, go ahead and take your cue from Han Solo. You're flying through the asteroid field. We all know what this is. There's a bounty on your head, but it's not from the Sovereign. The bounty that's on your head, Peter, is from the Kree.
Okay, yeah.
Because you killed Ronan. And everyone in the Kree Empire hates you because you killed Ronan. There is a bounty on your head from them. To suddenly have a fleet of Kree warships show up, that would have been the OS moment for the film.
Original series? Yeah, I agree.
Yes. If there were some alien misunderstanding, again, if the aliens in the film were more alien and less human, if the Sovereign had truly been almost so alien that you can't communicate with them, and Peter said something or Rocket did something that completely offended them to their core beyond just stealing a battery, then that might have made sense. But that's not what they did. They just seemed like the prissy girl in middle school and you looked at her wrong and now she's going to hound you until ninth grade kind of thing. And it just came off as superficially cheating.
Okay. I mean, now, for me, I saw it as... I saw it as a blatant plot device, but I thought it was funny enough that I was okay with it, and I just chalked it up for being part of the style of Guardians of the Galaxy.
I think if the Sovereign sat and stewed about the fact that their batteries were taken, and instead of chasing them, just decided, I'm going to make this person in this cocoon, and I'm going to send him after them, it still would have worked.
Okay, yeah. Or even if they were the ones who put the bounty, but others were hunting him down.
Exactly.
Okay. Right. Instead of just having them all playing video games.
Right. Yeah. They just, the way that they all gathered around the last video game playing guy, and when he failed, they just treated him, again, like this was all sixth grade, like, oh, you suck. You're a jerk. And they walked off, you know, it all seemed very silly.
It's Guardians movie, man. That's what you're in for. You're in for silly. There's the half panda. But I'm okay with that.
You know, I'm finally doing the thing that you want me to.
Yes. How's it feel? I feel your anger. It's made you more critical.
So let's get to the super awesome thing about the spoilers, which was Yondu.
Yeah.
But before that, let me say one quick thing about Rocket. Out of all the scenes in the film, one of the ones that I enjoyed the most was Rocket in the forest, taking on the entire army of Ravagers by himself.
Yes, and not just with all of his gadgets and outsmartery, trickery, but even hand-to-hand.
But hand-to-hand and just sheer bravery. And, you know, I even got the sense that everything that was going on internally with Rocket is he had lost Groot. Groot was his main attachment in life. And yes, they're all raising baby Groot as a family and as a community, but he lost his Groot. And no one had the connection with his Groot that he did. So in a way, he is still very alone here. So he's not that different from Peter or Gamora or some of the others in being very alone, or even Drax. So him being out in the forest and having a microphone and a speaker simulate him still being in the ship to trick the Ravagers, and him just waiting to throw himself into the thick of battle that he would create, it just showed that part of him had this "I don't care anymore" aspect.
Yeah, it's as if he took on the persona that Drax had in the first one.
Right. Like, Drax had a list of two people that he cared about and he lost them. Rocket had a list of one. And even when Peter looked at Rocket and said, "What is your goal here? To make everyone hate you? Because, you know, that's what you're doing." And it did seem a bit like that was his goal, was if he felt alone and yet he was still somehow surrounded by these people, he wanted to actually make it true, to make himself alone. And he couldn't do that with these people around, so he was pushing them away. He was trying to make his reality match the feelings that he was having. And in that way, this forest battle was almost like some of these other movies that you see, where there's someone who no longer cares if they live or die. And it resonated very deeply. And I thought that was just a wonderful 10 minutes of his character.
Plus, he was awesome.
Plus, just watching him punch somebody like 100 miles a minute in his head.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we get to Yondu, who was clearly the standout breakout character of the film, what was your best comedic moment?
I mean, it's hard to pick one. But mine is really silly. For me, it's definitely the ugly dog effect that happened while they were jumping through all of the space warps. Because it reminded me of, you know, there's that ugly dog thing where it's like they make the eyes and face too big. And when they had, as soon as I saw Rocket looking like that, because you see the other two guys first, and you're like, they're going to show Rocket. It's going to be hilarious. And it was awesome. That and all the different things people kept calling him, you know, trash panda, triangle face monkey, rat, fox. Yeah. Can I bet you're a puppy? It was so great.
Yeah, it's worse. It is so much worse.
Yeah.
I think mine has to be when Drax told Peter, as they were trying to escape Ego and yet fight him at the same time, and Ego was just going full villain. And he said, "You humans have issues." And Peter goes, "Of course I have issues. That's my freaking dad." Yeah.
Yeah, that was definitely a good one.
Had I been drinking a Coke, the person in front of me would have been wearing that said Coke. But yeah, so we have to give the full funeral fireworks props to Yondu and his character. And not only the way it was written, but the way that Michael Rooker acted the snot out of that part.
Yeah, he was amazing.
He was amazing. He's going to go down in IMDb history for that role.
Yeah, agreed.
And what I loved about him is, like you said, the vulnerability that he showed early on when he went up to Sylvester Stallone, and you really saw him suffer the pain of exile.
Mm-hmm.
And you realized that to Yondu, Stallone was his father.
Right, yeah.
And I've had a couple of people tell me, you know, but in the first Guardians, Yondu had that arrow right up to Peter's head, and he was just about to kill him before Kraglin said, you know, Captain's going to teach stuff, and kind of diffused the moment. So what changed with Yondu from being capable of being that guy who could be right on the edge of doing that to being this guy who ultimately, Cracklin would say, every time it comes to Peter, you defend him to the detriment of the rest of us. And to me, it was that moment with Stallone where Yondu realized this is what it feels like to have the person that you think of as your father tell you, I want nothing to do with you. You're alone now.
Right.
And although it was very subtly done to the point where it was never stated, I felt like that was his turning point, and that was what made him feel towards Peter the way that he felt in this film.
Or acknowledge that those feelings that he always had.
And that's not something that he can admit to the other pirates. And so he would treat Peter harshly publicly and to a point, but he would never let anything truly terrible happen to him.
Yeah, he's like Captain Shakespeare from Stardust, who couldn't admit that he was a cross-dresser to his crew.
Right. Or it's very much like the Jim Hawkins from Treasure Island, you know, where you've got the pirate who takes you under your wing, and there's a reason for it, and he may not ever tell you what it is, but it's still there. But to Yondu, that was not the point of saving Peter to ultimately be the person that Peter resented.
Right.
And by the way, let me say, in defense of Yondu and everything that Yondu ever did, if Yondu had stuck to the Ravager Code and not dealt in trafficking children, which was the entire reason that he was exiled, if Yondu had stuck to the code, Ego would have just found someone else to do it. And we'd all be dead now.
Yep.
So technically, Yondu guarded the frickin' galaxy before anyone.
And you didn't want to say frickin'.
And I didn't mean frickin'. So, if anyone deserved that funeral, it was Yondu. Not only for his last act of sacrifice, but for his first act of empathy.
Well stated.
But how great was Kraglin when he saw the colors, the Ravager colors, being fired outside the window? And he had the tears streaming down his face, and he just banged his own chest with pride and emotion. That 15 seconds of acting, oh my God, what Sean Gunn did with that scene was amazing.
So you saw the movie 3 times. Were your eyes ever not watery during that moment?
No, it was worse every time.
You felt it more.
I felt it more every time. And part of the reason that I want to buy the film is so that I can watch it at home alone and not be embarrassed about it.
I heard that when he was directed to act that scene, he was told to channel Christopher Lloyd.
Really?
I wanted to leave a pregnant pause there for a second. from the ending of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, yes.
Where he's like celebrating the release of a fellow patient. He was asked to look at that and to channel that.
Yeah.
So that's a fun tidbit. But this really was, I mean, the music they were using, all of the fireworks and everything, I saw it twice, it got me both times, and it made me want to play Better or Worse, Heroic Funeral Version.
Yes.
So I'm going to name some other people who had heroic deaths and or funerals, and you tell me if theirs was better or worse than Yondu, if Yondu's was better or worse than them. Okay?
Okay.
Thor's mom in Thor the Dark World.
Better.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Hers was pretty touching too, but we didn't grow as close to her as we did to Yondu. Peggy Carter's funeral in Civil War.
The 2 times that I really felt Peggy's funeral impact was when Steve first got the text message that she had gone, and when he was one of the pallbearers. And that, when he was the pallbearer, that's when it hit me. Because I thought, I cannot possibly imagine how that would feel. He is now, with the exception of Bucky, alone in the entire world of anyone who knew who he used to be.
So naturally, he'll want to kill everybody now. Watch out.
So naturally,
Hydra.
So naturally, he and Bucky will want to just kill everyone in the universe and just be together.
And then Bucky will be like, when I put that tumor in Peggy's head.
Right.
No! All right. So, but still, I mean, better or worse? Yondu better or worse than Peggy Carter's funeral?
Yondu is still better because Steve experienced loss, but Peter experienced true love and closure.
Yeah. Well said. Agreed. What about that amazing, epic funeral at the end of Batman versus Superman? Should I just go on to the next one? I think our listeners know where we stand.
Oh, you were serious.
All right. Another heroic death that kind of had... It wasn't really a funeral, but he took a very symbolic religious posture. Neo in The Matrix Revolutions.
I've never heard of that movie. I don't think that exists.
All right. Well, let's move to one I know you've seen, because I think it was the last one we reviewed, or one of the most recent ones we reviewed, Logan. How about Logan's death scene?
Oh.
This is tougher.
Oh.
This is how it feels.
Logan beats it.
Logan, because we're more invested in Logan, even though Yondu was great for a movie, right?
Yondu was that person who turned the corner in the very last opportunity to have turned the corner. But Logan was someone who had lived almost 200 years and never felt this feeling, and only got to have it in his last moment. Logan wins.
Logan wins. We found one that's better. There's a couple others. Elektra from the great Daredevil movie of... I don't remember what year it came out. I've never seen it all the way through. But I know she dies.
Right.
Jennifer Lawrence.
I'm not sure what movie that exists that you're talking about. A great Daredevil movie?
Yet to happen. All right. And finally, this one's obvious because it had the closest parallels to begin with the way he was sent off. You know, his body was sent off into space.
Mm-hmm.
Spock. The Spock. Send off from Wrath of Khan. And his sacrifice, which, you know, was for a whole crew instead of just a single person.
Oh, Kirk's eulogy of Spock. Oh. Kirk's is better.
Yeah. But
when he choked on the word human. Oh.
Human.
Yeah. Logan!
That's what it, you just gotta have some guy choking while saying something about you. Peter didn't choke, sorry. Doesn't count. Nullified. But I think we have established that this is the best death and send-off so far in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Yondu's, that is.
Do we not count Logan and Marvel? I guess we don't. We count that as 20th Century Fox.
Yeah.
Yes, it is the best. It is the best in the Marvel Universe.
So far, it's a standard that other deaths will now be held up to. So, good luck with that, other people who are not Mr. Gunn.
So, speaking of Mr. Gunn, would you like to know what's next for Mr. Gunn?
Would I?
Would you be shocked to learn that what is next for Mr. Gunn is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3?
Volume 5! Oh, okay. He's not doing a 2.5 first?
But here's the good news. He started writing Volume 2 the day after Volume 1 was released to the theaters as a way to distract himself and not be wrapped up into what the box office take was and what the reviews were.
Mm-hmm.
He just threw himself right into the story of what happens to these characters that I love. Well, he's been working on Guardians 3 for quite some time already, and he's been doing it with Kevin Feige, and he's been doing it with a mind to the big picture. So he's got somewhat of a seat at the table of the entire Marvel direction, including Infinity War and what happens afterwards.
I think he's impressed everybody enough. He's earned that spot.
I agree.
The next Thor movie seems to now be influenced, at least from the trailer, definitely, by his directing style. And yay, more Gunn.
Yeah. Give him a seat at the table and the beverage of his choice because he's earned it. Mm-hmm. Chris Pratt, in a surprise move that will surprise no one, is lined up for Avengers Infinity War and unnamed but soon to be released Jurassic World sequel.
Ooh. I couldn't sustain that enthusiasm. I cared zero bits about Jurassic World.
I think he may have also by now saved up enough money to buy that cool motorcycle that he wants.
Do you think?
Yeah. Zoe Saldana will be in Avengers Infinity War as Gamora.
Yay!
As well as, brace yourself,
the next Star Trek movie?
Avatar 2,
oh,
3,
yeah,
and 4.
Hmm.
But
what
just
do you think about your career at that point? I wonder.
Just in case Avengers Infinity War 1 or 2 and Avatar 2 through 4 doesn't make any money, she's hedging her bets. She will also be in My Little Pony, the movie.
Yes. Bronies everywhere celebrate.
As Captain Ciliano.
Of course.
So, Captain Ciliano fans.
Yeah.
She's got your fuzzy little back.
Yeah, I'm commenting like I know anything about that, except that my daughter has a couple squishy ones that she plays with in the bathtub. And I don't even know their names.
So, Drax, Dave Bautista, Avengers Infinity War. But also,
noticing a pattern here.
You won't have to wait that long to see Drax again. Blade Runner 2049.
That's when it's coming out? What do you mean by that long? I don't even want to do the math to think how long it's going to have to be till I see that movie.
You don't want to do the math, or you can't do the math?
6 of one, 12 dozen of the other.
So, the great thing about Dave Bautista being in Guardians is that he was in Riddick with Groot back when he looked more like Vin Diesel.
That's so true.
Kurt Russell, you want to know what he's doing next?
Sure.
Nothing. He's dead.
He's dead, Jim.
No, literally, IMDb has nothing for him. That's it. They killed Ego. He's done.
No.
But he was in the last two Fast and Furious movies with Groot.
Oh, yeah. Nice. No, I'm smelling more of a Big Trouble in Little China reboot.
Yeah. Or Reed Two Boots.
Wait, what?
Because he had boots on both feet.
I don't think reboot means what you think it means.
Oh. Would you say he had a plethora of boots?
I don't know. It's been a long time since I saw that movie. I think it's time to give us the boot.
I just tried to snake that joke in there.
Nice. I'll give you that one. That was good.
All right. Whew.
So, where can people find us?
I can be found at Secret Alias Man in various forms, and our podcast can be found at Fan Bro Friends.
To clarify, you're the same form, but in various formats, right?
No. I could be found in liquid, hydrogen, plasma, solid.
Wait, hydrogen? Instead of gas, you said hydrogen. You're making fun of my math skills. Water, rock, earth, wind, and fire.
Charizard, and Geodude.
Heart, and the fifth element, Lilu Dallas.
Lilu.
I've underestimated you, bro. If you can cosplay as Lilu, dude, I cannot give you enough props for the world.
There is only can. There is no should.
And there's no snake in your boot. Yeah, and you can find me at SanchoPandaVTW on Twitter. And I need more forms.
Form of a water buffalo.
A kangaroo, a bucket of water.
Why do I always have to be water? You could beat me with a sponge.
Yeah.
By the way, you know that there's a much tougher version of Zan and Jaina where, because he can turn himself into anything that's water, that means also ice, and he becomes this huge ice giant, and he's unbeatable. So they really flipped that character, and it was pretty awesome.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's like Power Pack level cool.
Yeah.
For the two listeners who know what Power Pack is.
I know what Power Pack is. Franklin Richards was my Horcrux.
I know, I read your comics. When I meant the two listeners, I meant the two of us after we download and listen to this. And maybe Gary.
Speaking of ego.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Let's just get to do our battle cry and get out of here.
Okay. And by we, I mean you do it, because I don't have one.
No, we decided one together. Now I can't even think of what it was.
Oh, yes, that's right. I remember now. But I was going to say, our upcoming episodes, we've got some really good episodes coming up, because we've got Wonder Woman coming out, which I have high hopes
Wonder
for.
Woman.
And we have Spider-Man coming out, which I have high hopes for.
Spider-Man.
So,
Spider-Man.
In the words of Dexter from Dexter's Lab.
From the movie Ego Trip.
From the movie Ego Trip. The future is taking too long. You put the hashtags at the end, right? That's how all the kids do it. That's what I was told.
By kids? Who are possibly playing a prank on you?
They might have also been throwing cabbages.
Cabbage! You know, I haven't done it yet, but I really want a, Did I ever... I guess we haven't done it, but at some point I want a, Yeah, like a who would win in a fight between the cabbage,
cabbage?
From dinosaurs
oh.
And the little wooden boy.
Yes. When food goes bad. That is my all-time favorite Dinosaurs episode.
It's my only one I like, and it's my favorite.
Oh, we want God. 40 million helicopters.
and a dollar! Brilliant.
Yeah.
The only other good thing about that show was the Mr. Lizard. We're gonna need another Timmy.
And the newscaster, Howard, hand up me.
That show was charmingly self-aware. It's hard to pull off, but it was.
Yeah. I loved, there was an episode where, the dad, his name's on the tip of my tongue, Neil,
Carl?
Ralph, Carl, was watching a show about dinosaurs done with puppets on television. And two female puppets came in pantyhose, and the wife on that TV show said, "Get that pair of hose out of my house." And Carl
was it
laughed.
Was like a Married with Children spoof or something?
And Carl pointed at the television and laughed, and he goes, "It's a puppet show, but it works on two levels." So that was like triple Inception points for that joke.
That is brilliant. I think a couple years ago I hunted down that single episode though on Netflix and made Amanda watch it.
Which man did you make watch it?
My wife.
Oh. It sounded like you were speaking Spanish. And I made a man to watch it.
Well, duh is of, so that wouldn't make sense. A man to watch it? The man of the watch. It's like Benicio del Toro.
Yes. And who watches the man of the watch?
I like to call him Benny the Bull.
Oh, you're killing me, Smalls.
I'd be that guy who'd like try to quote Zoolander while other people are quoting, and I'd get it wrong, and everyone just be like, "Okay, you spoiled the mood."
All right. I think I got this now.
Is this a school for ants? That's right, right? And then how it goes?
Yeah.
Guys, where are you leaving? I have fondue. Okay. More for me.
How can we teach the children how to read if they can't even fit in the building?
See, I know the scenario. I just don't remember like the word-for-word stuff like I do like with Holy Grail or some other classic like that.
The Derek Zoolander School for Children Who Can't Read Good and Other Things. Oh, the files are in the computer.
All right, we good? We ready to go?
Yeah. Yeah.